Welcome back to KCUR's Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman, and my next guest is Sonia Warshawski. She's a Holocaust survivor who lives here in Kansas City, and her family is telling her story in a documentary titled Big Sonia. We'd love to visit with Sonia in studio, but we're talking to her on the phone this morning because in her 90s, she's still got to work as a tailor. Hi, Sonia. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Thanks for joining us this morning. I know you're really busy as a tailor at the shop.
Thank you. Yes.
You were born in Poland. Tell me about your early childhood.
Well, I was born, it's in the eastern part of Poland, and the name of the city is, in our language, we call it Mezrich, but on the map, originally, is Międzyrzec Podlaski, is the name of the city. And my childhood was very normal, like other, you know, young children. And we were three children at home, and my parents were, you know, very modern, not fanatic religion. So I come from a really wonderful, wonderful upbringing from my parents. And as you know, the eastern part of Poland, I don't know if you can look it up on the map and see exactly where the city is situated. Matter of fact, the name of the city, we call it Międzyrzec, that means among rivers. In that little city, we had three rivers. And we had always a joke, when a baby is born, she knows already how to swim. Yes.
Well, things took a really shocking turn. It's a story we all know in the textbook sense. I mean, the story of the Holocaust. But how did it unfold in your life?
Well, 1939, you know.
How old were you?
At that time, I was closer to 14, not quite.
Okay, yeah, please go on.
And the Germans came in. And as you know, first, you know, the soldiers, the army comes in, and then later the SS takes over, and they are doing all of those horrible things to us, as you know.
Yeah, I mean, and how did you first become aware, like, of their presence, of what was happening? At that age, it must have been a little confusing. If not,
yes,
I mean, among other things.
Yes. First of all, there was no such thing to realize and to foresee that they will be guessing us, you know, to the gas chambers. This was people could not believe it to the last minute. And this was the very horrible thing for us. When we finally find out that we are going to our deaths. And then when they came in, they did gradually. The Germans really had a way of doing things in everything had to fall in place. So it started, you know, with a ghetto. Yeah, I'm sure you are familiar what a ghetto is.
Yeah,
okay?
A walled part of the city where
yes.
The Jewish people remained.
Everyone tried to have some kind of, to be working in a factory or something, that you will be not, so, you know, taking to the gas chambers. But what can I tell you? The ghetto was a awful place to be, and we still could not believe the truth. But my father had a very close friend who was a Christian. And when the war broke out, he moved away to a small little village, which was close to Treblinka. I don't know if you are aware what Treblinka was.
I've never been myself.
It was a camp. You went in, and that's it. You died. Only they used people for, you know, to clean up and bury the bodies, and also sorting the clothes, which the better clothes was going to Germany, and if they found any, you know, like something jewelry, they had to take it over. They were watching, the SS was watching there. Of course, in Treblinka, I don't know if you are familiar, that also the Ukrainians and the Litvins are very much helping the Germans, because Hitler promised them if they will join their ranks, they will get their country back. So really, Treblinka, which was an awful, I am sure you are familiar with that, if you know about the Holocaust history, was a place you went in and that's it.
Yeah, and I mean, so you ended up...
Really, all my family wind up there to the gas chamber.
Yeah, I mean, and how from there did you end up? I mean, you said that you didn't know that you were going to your deaths. You are still here. I mean, how did your story? How did it go from there? How did you survive?
Yeah, well, it's really so much. You know, I can talk all day and will not tell you all this history, but it really happens though. That our ghetto had 7 deportations, okay? And you know what I mean by deportations. I was falling in with my mom. It's a very long story because we were 3 children. We were only 2 survivors. My sister survived in the forest and then on the end with the partisans. And she was liberated by the Russians. And me and my mom... Well, fell in. It's just like I mentioned to you in the 6th deportation. We went to the trains, cattle trains, and I'll never forget, it was around April, May the 3rd. Why I do remember so vividly, because my brother was born May the 3rd. And they took us, it was a very warm day, and they put us like herring, you know, we're so tight. You could not even sit. You had to stand. There was just a tiny, tiny little window with, you know, wiring. And
Like barbed wire.
I start telling you about how we finally knew that we're going to our deaths, since I didn't finish about this, that our friend, my daddy's friend, who moved away, I mentioned to you before, and the village happened to be very close from Treblinka, and he knew, he saw what is going on. One day he came in specially, our ghetto was still open, and he came specially to warn us and tell us the truth, that if they are taking us, that we are going to our death. And at that time, I was working in a brush factory. Matter of fact, I want to tell you, our town was very famous all over the world as far the brushes, the brush factories, and also fur and leather. And since this was such an important for them, for the Germans, to keep us as long, the ghetto was kept as long as possible on account that they needed us. And then on the 7th, so I went with the 6th transportation, the deportation to Majdanek with my mom. And I want to describe it to you. It was horrible.
Yeah, I mean, feel free to describe it.
From thirst, babies, you can imagine. So after when our friend came to tell us, my mother made it sure that we all had some little money on us. I was wearing some boots, and I had some money in it. And you can imagine, I'll never forget, I was a short little girl, and I was standing on dead bodies to reach that little open window into, because on the station there are some Polish young men were working, and I put out my hand with some money, and he handed over to me a canteen with water. You can imagine, I still remember, I took a sip of the water, and then I want to give it to my mom. Until today, I still don't remember, because people, to die from thirst is even worse than from, you know, malnutrition. And everybody want to grab this little canteen. So till today, I still don't recollect if my mom was managing to have a sip of the water.
Oh, if you don't mind my saying so, you know, there are not a lot of Holocaust survivors left. And I grew up meeting survivors, hearing stories from people like you. And the power of that is something that no book or movie could capture, just sitting with a human being.
Oh, you are so understanding. I listen very often to you, and you are a wonderful interviewer. You are must be a very smart young lady.
Well, thank you. But I mean, it's easy to imagine that when you've been through something like this, the last thing you want to do is revisit it. But I wonder if you feel an obligation to tell your story and dive back in, or if it's something that you do sort of willingly and
I will. Yeah, it's a very good question. I will tell you, when I came out from this hell, I could not smile. I could not feel any happiness. It's like they call it a guilt, you know, survivor's guilt. And even somebody was saying a joke, I would catch myself. How can I be, you know, smiling or happy? Not to see, not to forget in my memory all of those horrible sadism, what I went through. I myself, I want to stay to the question what you asked me. That is impossible for any normal person, if you read 100 books and see 100 films, it's no way. Because like 10 years ago, I remember I went to Washington to see the museum, you know, the Holocaust Museum. And I realized later that as a survivor, I went in with different eyes. So I will say to you, everyone should go and really see this Holocaust Museum. Not only it's only about World War II, period, about our boys, how they fought gallantly, but to say they did a wonderful job as humanly possible. But if you want to ask me, Gina, that this is the way it was, no. It's no one can describe it, only the survivor. And as you say, tell me, there are only few of us left. I'm the last one, I believe. I'm still speaking any place they call us. And what I'm saying, us, because we have like 7, 8 survivors from the second generation. And they have to go through a course in learning. And among them, my daughter. When I go to speak, she comes with me. She does the PowerPoint. And it's very powerful. And then I come in to speak. I will tell you all those years how it awakened about speaking. One day, I heard for the first time, I'll never forget, the skinheads denying it never happened. This was the moment it moved me. It's like a thunder came in to my brain and say, Sonia, hey, this is the reason you survived. Now you have to start to speak up. Speak up, because I have still, you know, my number. As you know, we had all those numbers put on us. In a day of deliberation, I want you to know I was shot also. I went through a lot of terrible beatings and seeing people hanging and seeing horrible things that only even hell cannot be worse. It's indescribable. And as you know, less and less of us is, you know, still around. So this is the reason we have the second generation, that, as you know, that some of our parents, our survivors, who never told the children what really they went through. For some reason, I can understand, they couldn't talk about it. But it was not good for the children. Now they are kind of angry about it. Their parents did not tell them. But they want to probably save them from hearing this, you know, horrible, you know, story.
What has it been like?
Go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, what has it been like for you to have your family making a documentary about your story?
Oh, this is really something. It came from them. In the beginning, I was the impression that they are doing it just, you know, to for the family, you know, later to have a legacy. But they did not tell me that there will be a movie. And I must tell you, they're doing it with their love. And I'm really, really excited. And I hope they will be successful. And I'll never, never realize how much work and how much also, you see, money it takes to make a film. So this is kind of, you know, hard on me to see that they, and it's really now my highest point, I guess, in my life, that my granddaughter and her husband, they wanted to do it with love, that maybe other people will gain from it. I hope so.
Have you seen the footage that will be screening at the festival this weekend, or will it be a surprise to you?
I don't have a computer. And I know, once in a while I see, you know, even my customers come in and they have little, you know, my daughter also, just little fragments. But I have not seen yet the footage, what they have already. As you know, it's not finished yet because they're still short a little on, you know, money. And so I'm hoping that everything will go well for their sake.
Are you going to take the day off of work to be there? It's incredible to me that you're still in your shop.
Gina, it will be on Sunday. Sunday, 7 o'clock in the Jewish Community Center. And so it happened to be Sunday. I'm not working on Sunday.
You don't work on Sundays. But what does work mean to you? I mean, is it an important part of your life? You're in your 90s and you're invited to
very,
the radio.
Very important.
You're still going to go to work.
Oh, working? Yeah, I tell you. I am a widow. I lost my husband. He was also a survivor. It's already 28 years. And I have been working for so many years. We used to be 35, 36 years in Metcalf South Shopping Center to begin with. I stepped in when my husband was, you know, getting sick, and he had Parkinson's. So I went through a lot with that. And it's already 28 years since I lost my husband. And my whole aim is to speak. The greatest joy for me and fulfillment is to speak in schools for the future generation, that they want to know in the schools now, they have the curriculum to study about it. So I am doing this because from my heart, and I reach their hearts. You can imagine, I have hundreds and hundreds of letters from the students to encourage me. Please keep on speaking. When I used to say to my daughter, if I reach one heart, I accomplish something.
Oh, thank you so much, Sonia.
You see the hundreds and hundreds of letters, what they're telling me, you changed my life. What else can I ask?
Oh, that's
this
beautiful.
This is my fulfillment in my life. The letters from those students encouraging me.
Sonia Warshawski.
Then on all those years, I do speak in churches, any place, companies, they call us. Wherever is the call, I feel this is my duty.
Sonia, I'm so curious to hear the rest of your story, but, and I'm sure our listeners too, we'll all just have to catch that screening this Sunday at 7. More information about the Jewish Film Festival is online at thejkc.org. To listen back to this conversation or anything else you've heard on Central Standard, go to kcur.org/Central Standard. Tomorrow on Screen Time, we'll turn our attention to Comedy Central's Broad City. KCUR's Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross. I'm Gina Kaufman. Up to Date is next. Don't miss it.